Hey Retrospectors, for our third birthday, we've filmed an hour-long Q&A answering your questions.
We discuss our favourite facts, how we make the show, and what we've learned along the way.
If you're already supporting us on Patreon, thank you. You can watch it right now at patreon.com/retrospectors.
And if you're not a Patreon member, sign up. You don't have to pay a thing to become a free member and watch it now.
So check it out. It's free. patreon.com/retrospectors.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's April 29th, 1852, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ollie. The Retrospectors.
So it's today in history, the past, antiquity, that the first edition, copy, version of Peter Roget's thesaurus, glossary, lexicon, was published, printed, or released in Great Britain.
Oh my
Britain,
God, is this the next the 10 UK. Minutes?
I was just finishing, actually. Was published in Great Britain, the UK, Brexit land.
Roget had compiled what became published as his thesaurus in his 20s, but by the time it was actually published, he was 73. He reflects on this in the forward, where he writes, "It is now nearly 50 years since I first projected a system of verbal classification similar to that on which the present work is founded. Conceiving that such a compilation might help supply my own deficiencies, I had in the year 1805 completed a classed catalogue of words on a small scale, but on the same principle and nearly the same form as the thesaurus now published." And there was a huge demand. It went through 28 print runs in Roget's lifetime.
Yes, it's funny, isn't it? The public understood it immediately. Here is a really useful guide for if you're writing stuff and you want to use a different word to the word that immediately occurs to you. And yet critics didn't understand it. "Its practical utility, we think, is overrated," Harper's Magazine wrote. The London critic said, "It is not likely to be so practically useful as the care, toil and thought bestowed upon it might have deserved." It's like one of the most successful books of all time. But that care, toil and thought absolutely resonates throughout Roget's career. As you said, he'd been working on this for decades, initially just for his own personal enjoyment as a tool for him when he was writing. He'd been writing entries for Encyclopaedia Britannica as well as being a doctor, but also with a distant view to one day I might like to publish this. And I just love the fact that he actually genuinely, in this era, 1850, waited until his retirement when there was a very real risk he was about to pop his clogs, but he waited and then made it a retirement project and lasted another three decades and got to see the incredible success of it and have a complete second career with it.
It is amazing. But you can understand some of the criticisms that were being levelled at this book when it came out, because the 15,000 words it contained were arranged conceptually rather than alphabetically. And in fact, the alphabetical index that he added at the end was sort of an afterthought. He hadn't originally had in mind that he wanted to have that as part of the book. And I've got a copy here, and you can actually see his...
What?
He really does have a copy there.
You can actually see his brain working by the way that each chapter unfolds. So, for example, section 2, dimensions, the entries go in order: size, littleness, expansion, distance, contraction. So they're not obviously going in alphabetical order, but you can see his brain whirring, going, so these are the things that people are going to need synonyms for. And only if you consult the back of the book, which was the thing that he came up with at the end, could you find your way to them in a sensible way.
Yeah, it's essentially a taxonomy of the English language, kind of modelled on the taxonomy of the animal kingdom. Roget's idol was the Swedish naturalist Carl Linnaeus, who developed the system we use to classify the natural world today, those two-word Latin descriptors, you know, aloe vera, boa constrictor, rattus rattus. And so Roget did the same thing for the English language, those six general classes. For instance, under the class of matter, you find fluid matter. Under fluid matter, you'd find ocean. And under ocean, you'll find a word group which includes synonyms: sea, deep, brine, saltwater, waves. And you can really see the way that Roget's mind worked, because there were 1,002 word groups in the tome, and he made two of them A and B subsections to make sure they stayed that round number of 1,000. Because the thing was, is that you think, well, why, you know, it would be more useful as a work of reference if it were alphabetical. But he wasn't really about making it into a useful work of reference as much as he was about making sure everything was classified in its place and in its section. What he was actually doing was creating a map of the English language that you could navigate. It required a lot more brain power to find the word you wanted. You had to understand where it sits philosophically before you can start looking for it. You know, obviously the alphabetical index that he added in would become the standard way of organizing a thesaurus going forward, except Roget's, which is still in print and remains faithful, as Ariane has shown us just now, to that original taxonomy.
Although, by the way, just a side note on the copyright, anyone can call their thesaurus Roget's, just as anyone can call a dictionary Webster's. The proprietary
can't think
bit
of a way to monetize this. They need to go away and think about it.
The Roget Spectres?
The proprietary bit, which is copyrighted by HarperCollins these days, is Roget's International Thesaurus. You can't call it that, but you can call it Roget's something else.
I can work around that.
But I mean,
I've got a book that will show me a perfect synonym for international.
But I think, you know, saying that he didn't have an interest in it being a utility, more an interest in just ordering the world, I think he was doing both. It's just that for him, because he was such a polymath, he was a physician, he was a mathematician, he was a scientist, he liked to play chess. He by the way, invented the first travel chess set as well. Nice. But because he thought in that very mathematical way about ordering things, for him it was a tool of utility. But yeah, it is a surprise when you look at the original Roget's Thesaurus published on this date, realize that the first entry doesn't begin with an A. The first entry is existence.
Right. Yeah, so it's never been out of print since it was first published. And by 2002, it had sold over 32 million copies, I'm sure even more by now. Interestingly, it was an instant hit in Britain, but it didn't sell that well when an American edition was published 2 years later. But when Americans went crazy for crossword puzzles in the 1920s, his thesaurus assumed its place on reference shelves across the US. And now, you know, in the years since, it's really been celebrated, particularly by writers. The Peter Pan creator J.M. Barrie put a copy of his thesaurus in Captain Hook's cabin so he could declare, "The man is not wholly evil. He has a thesaurus in his cabin." And the 20th century poet Sylvia Plath called herself Roget's strumpet.
And we mentioned that it took 50 years to get published, but the journey towards creating the thesaurus had begun even earlier. Roget was obviously passionate about language, but he was even more passionate about lists. From early childhood, he had always tried to categorize everything he encountered. I mean, he also struggled with depression throughout his life, and it doesn't take too much amateur psychology to see how, you know, this obsessive need to order everything could be a bit of a coping mechanism.
Yes.
He had a really glittering career as a respected physician. You know, he was born in London in 1779. His father was Swiss, hence his surname being that French-derived Roget. He'd studied medicine at the University of Edinburgh, and then he ultimately ended up at the Manchester Royal Infirmary, and it was here that he began compiling his word list. Supposedly, he was irritated by the frequent repetition of words in the medical world. I mean, I'm not sure medicine is the best place for lots of vague synonyms.
This guy's got, like, cancer or something.
What's another word for pain? Like, owie? In the 17th century, several thinkers had attempted to create lists of synonyms. This was part of the wider kind of Age of Enlightenment preoccupation with language and meaning. However, these were generally more like essays or sort of academic tomes. You know, they had names like English Synonyms Explained and The Difference Between Words Esteemed Synonyms in the English Language and the Proper Choice of Them Determined. And it was kind of in this tradition that Roget was writing too. But the fact that his compendium was so exhaustive did make it instantly popular as a reference work.
Yeah, because you understand what his intentions are. You know, this sort of autistic utility of the subtitle. Roget's Thesaurus of English Words and Phrases Classified and Arranged So to Assist in Literary Composition. I mean, you get what that is, don't you?
Yeah.
Whereas some of the prior examples obviously hadn't been quite as cynically commercial as that.
Yeah, I mean, Roget was a STEM girly, it has to be said. He ended his career as a professor of physiology, so very much, you know, the scientific side of medicine. He'd retired from practicing much earlier. He retired altogether from medicine in 1840 at the age of 61, and he kind of started going back to the thesaurus idea, but he was also secretary of the Royal Society, one of the most eminent positions you can really have in public science, certainly in the UK. And it wasn't until 1848, when he finally stepped down from that post, that he really really threw himself into getting the thesaurus into publishable shape.
And yet, you know, we've been celebrating him throughout this episode. However, the classic danger as a writer is that by having this easy reference, and of course it's easy, even easier now with thesaurus.com, etc., is that what you're doing is you're not trying to find the best words to summarise your thought. You're just thinking, I'm saying the same thing repeatedly, and that's boring to read rhythmically, so let me substitute one of these words for a replacement so it feels like there's some variation in what I've written. Yeah. And actually, the copy that ends up afterwards is often substantially worse than if you just thought harder about what the right word would be in the first place. And the classic example is when restaurant reviewers use the phrase eatery. I mean, no yeah. one says eatery in real life, but it's because they don't want to say restaurant five times in the article.
Plus, you also have English constantly being expanded by slang. And of course, we can all lean on the Urban Dictionary to help us work out what various slang words mean. But what if you want to think of some other word for one of your favorite slang words? Well, there's also the Urban Thesaurus.
Is there? Which, I did not know yeah, that.
It's so great. I went and typed in the word money, and you get Skrilla, Cheddar, Muller, Coin, and Bling out for that. I thought, now
the
that.
The Cheddar Shot.
Yeah,
exactly. That doesn't matter.
I wonder which one of the six classifications that would come under.
Tomorrow.
A plastic body with an incredibly sharp spike on top, like the kind that German soldiers had in World War I on their helmets.
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.